And welcome to Shattered Lives, a lively, educational, and issues-driven radio show designed to tell another side of the story, to focus on and humanize crime victims, to enlighten and shine the spotlight on organizations and service providers, and to assist those who walk the path with us. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice, your host, with my co-host, Delilah Jones, president of Imagine Publicity.com, welcoming you this Saturday evening in my corner of the world from Connecticut and from Delilah's corner of the world, South Carolina, to this show each and every Saturday to educate, to enlighten, and to entertain. But mostly we like to increase awareness to the issues, and want to mention very quickly that I would love to have, if they are familiar with DonnaGore.com and ImaginePublicity.com, to please go to those two websites, as well as Shattered Lives to follow, because that way you'll be updated on all the new and upcoming things that are going on, as well as listening to nearly 3 years worth of wonderful archive shows for Shattered Life. We're coming up to a three-year anniversary. Hard to believe. And without further ado, I have to welcome back my co-pilot, my co-host, Delilah. It's been a little while. I know you've been a very busy lady. Welcome back. How are you?
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be back, and I've missed being here. You've had some wonderful shows and some, you know, very good guests.
Well, I like to think so. You know, I'm not as techno savvy as you. I don't like to multitask on the radio, but we somehow made it through without you. So, you know, this evening we have a very special guest, somebody that we met at the Q Center conference in last March. And you know, these people had a striking presence, not only because of their snazzy uniforms, you know, with red berets and just the kind of the way they carried themselves and their whole passion about being there for missing people. And never before did I make the connection until I did the show with Marcus Stryker Dent that you know, the guardian angels were so passionate about the topic of missing persons. Did you necessarily make that connection, Delilah?
No, I really had no idea that they were so involved, and it was just refreshing to meet everyone there and to have their presence at the conference and to have their involvement. I think that's, you know, even the best part of it is that they are very actively involved. And you know, as we all know, in that realm, it takes everybody's cooperation and help.
Right, and I think if you all had a chance to listen to the first show that I stripped the other day, it kind of debunks some of the myths that, you know, they're not like the enforcer. They're all about community activism and cooperation and collaboration. And so I think we're taking a little bit of a different tact. Our guest is the assistant chapter commander for the Baltimore Guardian Angels. And her, I guess you say, her affiliated name is, her nickname is Crush, Crush Kent. And it's a pleasure to have you this evening, Crush. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's great. Hey, we're hearing a little bit of wind noise. Are you outside there, or can you move to maybe a little bit where it's not quite as windy or whatever? I'm just hearing a little bit of wind there or something. So just wondering if perhaps you might be able to do that. If not, we'll make it through. You know, we had a very informative conversation this week, and it lasted about an hour and a half, and I felt like I got to know you fairly well as a person. I was very impressed. You know, the Baltimore Guardian Angels was not, you know, the topic that we are here to talk about tonight. It's about a much more intimate, a much more personal issue, one that plagues many, many women and men as well, And I know, you know, the masses call it domestic violence, but we like to be more descriptive and call it intimate partner violence. And you were touched by that in a very controlling way. And I think your account is very unique in a number of ways. And I just want to mention, other than, you know, reading a bio, I would like to kind of hit the highlights a little bit of some of your accomplishments, and then we can kind of go into the meat of our show this evening, okay?
Okay.
Okay. You know, number one, you know, we all have to make a living, and all of these things that we do on behalf of victims of crime are our passions and our advocacies and our volunteerism, and we share a commonality that we happen to be state employees working with people who have issues, who have problems. So they're in that's your daytime job. You know, you are the assistant chapter commander for the Guardians. You also are very much a community advocate in terms of what the Guardians stand for, as well as just trying to represent, you know, young women, young minority women, people of color. You, from what I understand, are very much a public speaker and a presenter on the issues that you know about personally. You also are the creator of a special missing persons organization that's geared toward featuring minority persons, and which is very much needed. And I was very happy to hear that you are an aspiring author with a book in the making, correct?
Correct.
Well, that's quite a well-rounded resume. So I hope I hit the highlights sufficiently. But so, you know, with that kind of a backdrop, what I'd like to focus on first of all is that from a personal stance, I saw that, you know, your journey with intimate partner violence is a different sort of one, and I listed a few reasons, but I wondered if perhaps would you like to sort of tell a summarized version of what occurred with you, so we can kind of reference that?
So I was in a relationship with an older gentleman. He was about 10 or 11 years older than I was. And we met when I was working at my previous employer. You know, and he presented himself to be, you know, a decent person, a single father, doing community activism. And it transpired into something terrible very quickly, you know. Subtle things like, you know, where are you going? How long are you going to be? Who are you going to be meeting? Can I come with you? And then when he couldn't come with me, he would start insinuating that, you know, I was cheating, I was unfaithful, just crazy, absurd things. This lasted pretty much for about the entire 6 months that he and I were together.
Did it start right away in the beginning, those kinds of behaviors?
Honestly, it did. Subtle things. My phone out to send a text message or to text on my phone. He wanted to know, well, who are you texting? And I could see him looking over my shoulder, trying to look at my cell phone.
Jeez. Wow. You know, that just seems kind of over the top, especially since you're just, you know, starting a dating relationship. And what kind of turned the tide in terms of you thinking, hey, there's something wrong here?
When he started calling me names, I guess it should have bothered me with the subtle things that he was doing, like looking over my shoulders, look at my cell phone, but it really didn't start bothering me until he started calling me names, which were pretty graphic. I referenced them in my story, the Blue Dreamcatcher, but I really don't want to, you know, announce that on here. But they were pretty derogatory names, and
mm-hmm.
for no reason, like no reason. If I was 5 minutes late to his house from work, and I worked an hour away from where I live, you know, he would start verbally abusing me, calling me names that were very inappropriate. And it's like, you know, what is your deal? You know, I was stuck in traffic or whatever. He didn't want to hear it. He just automatically knew because I was 5 or 10 minutes late to his house that I was cheating on him.
Mm-hmm. And he'd go into a rage, huh?
Yes, he would go into a rage.
Did it escalate? And what kind of patterns did you see beyond the verbal abuse?
Beyond the verbal abuse, you know, it really was not physical. There was one incident where he did push me, and I turned around and I pushed him right back and told him, don't ever do that shit to me again, excuse my language. But, you know, that was the only incident that I can recall where there was actual physical contact. But his verbal assaults on me were pretty much like physical assaults. They left me tired, you know, jaded, and pretty much feeling very much abused. Because I had done absolutely nothing to this man.
Right. But wasn't it more the controlling aspect that is so, weighs so heavily on you and is so draining?
It really was. He would also do things like take my keys out of my purse so that I could not get into my car to leave his house. So
what?
I remember, one incident, he and I got into a fight. A verbal confrontation, and he took my car keys out of my purse, and he wouldn't tell me what he did with them. So I literally searched the house for like 20 minutes for my car keys so that I could leave.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, and he didn't give them back to me until I threatened to call the police on him.
Mm-hmm. Now, Crush, how did you... You said you met this person through work, right, or a former job?
Yeah.
And he presented himself in a certain way, right? So, but did you know anything about his background before you, you know, started dating him?
No, I didn't. I didn't know that he was abusive and a psychopath, excuse my language. you know, he was very articulate, nice. He could put on community events. He was heavily involved in the community. So people like that, you think, okay, they have their stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
When, in fact, that's just a smoke screen.
It's a smoke screen. Delilah, does that sound like some of the people that Sandra Brown talks about in her books?
It sounds, you know, very common. You know, it's so different when you're on the outside looking in and you see these situations happening rather than being involved in it, and you don't see it coming. You don't, because it is a gradual thing. And I think, you know, Crush can probably agree with that. It wasn't something that just happened overnight. They don't suddenly become violent or abusive. It's a buildup. And that's a very, very common thing. Everything that you've said is very indicative of the pattern of behavior for just about all abusers.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so what brought it to the pinnacle of, you know, I got to get away from this guy. Now, when we spoke, I think it was Tuesday, had you try to distract yourself by getting involved with creating Remember Me first, right? Was that the sequence? You were like, okay, I have to do something else with my life, and then you saw a pattern of behavior with those people that matched your boyfriend. Is that right?
Yeah.
Tell us how that came about and what Remember Me is about.
Honestly, about 2 months after his verbal assaults and that behavior, I knew that I had to get away from him, and that was before I started Remember Me. But he had a son who was attached to me, and I didn't just want to up and abandon the child.
Oh, boy.
But it became, you know, oh, my God, like, if I don't abandon this child, I'm abandoning myself.
Mm-hmm.
It was just too much. So about 2 months after that, I knew I had to get out of there. There was no being with him. He was a total nut job. But mm-hmm. I had to do it in a way where, you know, for my safety, because I knew he was crazy and unstable, and I did not want to hurt his child. Now, when I started Remember Me, that was in July 2011. That was in, I believe, April of 2011. I left mm-hmm. him in July. So in April 2011, I started Remember Me. There was a young lady that lived in North Carolina that came up to Baltimore, Maryland to visit her family for the holidays. Her name was Felicia Barnes. I don't know if you mm-hmm. all heard of her.
I saw your name, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, 6 months after she came up to visit, they found her body. And that really did something to me as a woman and as a woman of color, because I felt like women of color, when tragic things like that happen to them, it does not garner national attention.
Absolutely.
And I didn't want that to go in vain. That happens way too often, and I wanted to do something about it. So I started the grassroots organization called Remember Me, where each month I would profile a minority woman and or child who was murdered or missing. And in doing so, I would meet with the family and friends of that missing or murdered person. And I would host vigils, and I would also do what's called Honk for Her. And the Honk for Her is where we would go out in the community with posters with the victim's face, and encourage drivers to honk their horn. And, you know, people would stop and ask questions like, who is this person? And, oh, okay, try to make these people remember, you know, who these people were. And I also wanted the public to remember, you know, how these people live, not just victims of violence.
Right.
I did that, and it was a huge success. But in doing so, I learned a lot about my victims. Most of them had a commonality. And an abusive boyfriend and or husband, or someone they were involved with was abusive to them. And they ended up missing and or dead. Well, a light bulb went off in my head, you know, like, oh, my God, this is going to be me if I do not get away from this crazy guy. The first event that I had was in front of City Hall, and the media came out. There were newspapers. I had politicians there. The former police commissioner here in Baltimore City came to support it. So
wow.
It was a huge success. Well, we're leaving the event, and he's accusing me of passing out my telephone number and flirting with guys at the event.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Yeah, as we're leaving, and it's like anything that I wanted to do for myself or any time I was at peace, he had to ruin it. He had to find a way to disrupt my, you know, my mood.
Because the attention was not on him, right? It was on
exactly.
you, and he didn't like that.
Exactly.
Right?
He didn't see me making connections with everyone. It was just the men.
Mm-hmm.
As we were leaving. So that was definitely confirmation that, yes, you're going to be one of these women that you're profiling unless you get away from him.
Okay. Wow, that was your aha moment then, huh?
Yeah, that was definitely confirmation. You've got to get out of this relationship. Otherwise, you're going to be one of these people that you're profiling. But it was very sad, because when I talked to these family and friends of these missing or murdered victims that I profiled, they all had a commonality, and it was an abusive husband and or boyfriend.
Yeah. Now, you said you pick one person per month, right, or to profile,
yeah.
but there's many more than that. I mean, how'd you go about your selection process, or was it just somebody that kind of struck your heart?
I started off with two other young ladies. However, it was just too much for them, and they did not want to go through with it. Well, I continued doing it by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you're right, there's way too many victims to profile. I could have done probably one a day.
Right.
But I wanted to dedicate a month, which, you know, is not really a lot of time, but I felt like 30 days was a decent amount of time to profile them and get their story out there for the public.
Right.
I tried to pick people where are victims that were recently missing and or murdered in 2011 when I started Remember Me.
And is there a link or a website that people can go to read some of these profiles? Are they archived?
I have them. They're archived. When I joined the Guardian Angels, I actually combined Remember Me with the Guardian Angels. So everything that I did with Remember Me, I combined it to the Guardian Angels. So Remember Me is no longer.
Okay, I didn't understand that. Is there a link on the Guardian Angels website to, you know, what you were doing or as a tribute?
There should be one. I'm not sure if it's updated. If not, we will have to do so. But I will check after this podcast. I will definitely check. There was one.
That would be great.
Yeah, I do have their stories still, the people that I profiled. And some of them, I believe all of them actually are on Facebook as well.
Oh, they are. So, I think I actually came across it accidentally, although I'm not sure unless somebody else has done something similar. But I think that's a wonderful, wonderful thing for you to have done. And I know it really touched you. Let's kind of cycle back a little bit with regard to your personal story and tell us, you're at the moment where, okay, this is the crossroads in the path here. Do I go left? Do I go right? Getting away from this guy. Was there an incident where you had to seek a protective order? Because I want you to talk about the reaction of the police, the law enforcement, which I thought was amazingly bad.
So it was June 2011. I'll never will forget this day. I'm walking, and I'm on my way to work, and I'm walking in the building, and my phone rings, and it's him. And we're mm-hmm. talking, and then I conclude the phone call because I'm on my way to work. I have to go into work. Well, he called me, and I didn't know it. Apparently, my phone was on silent, or I just did not get his telephone call. And then, you know, he left me this nasty message, calling me all types of names, you telling me how I'm using work as an excuse to sleep with other men. I really wasn't at work. When he found me, what he was going to do to me, it was just crazy. And, you know, this is what I was used to. This particular day, this is what he did. He did this stuff to me. It was nothing new, nothing different, nothing out of the ordinary. But I think that was my breaking point. It was like, you know what? What the hell am I doing? What the hell have I been doing? I don't know, but I
you're
can't
smarter
do this.
Than this, yeah.
I just can't do this anymore. So
right.
I called him back, laid him out. The story pretty much, you know, says exactly what I said to him. I pretty much told him, you can go F himself because
mm-hmm.
I'm done. Goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
I never see you again. Don't ever call me. I'm done with you. You are a piece of you-know-what, and I'm done. So, and he threatened me on the phone. He told me, I'm going to kill you. Like, you can't just leave me
so,
who you are. And I said, look,
he did
like
actually threaten to kill you on that, what you thought was the final conversation.
Yes, he threatened me. He told me that he was going to kill me. And I told him, guess what? I'd rather be dead than to be with you. So if that's what you're going to do, then do it. Because I'm not going to be dead, alive, whatever. I'm not going to be with you. This is over. And I'm saying this in the polite way, but when I told him this, it was anything but polite. And I hung up the phone on him. And there was an immediate sense of relief. Like,
mm-hmm.
this man had just threatened me. I was like, I'm done with him. You know,
mm-hmm.
it was, I could breathe. It just felt so refreshing, invigorating. And I was done with him. Like I,
you
was,
thought you
oh,
were, right?
Exactly.
You thought you were.
So
what happened? What happened next? Did you go to the police because of this threat?
I didn't. I was so on cloud nine that I finally told him what to go do with himself. I just was like, okay, everything's grand. I never have to see him again. You know, everything's great. Not so much.
Can I interrupt a second, Delilah? Is this that what Susan Murphy Milano always talked about, that never reveal what you're going to, that false sense of security and everything's going to be fine because I have my plan, la, 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 or whatever?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's one of the things that she would try to get across to victims, and it's difficult because, you know, like Crush just talked about, get that feeling of relief and all of a sudden you feel a little power and, you know, you want to do something to get revenge for all of the bad things that have happened to you. And mm-hmm. it's probably the worst thing a victim can do at that point, because if he threatens to kill you, he will kill you. So, you know, that's the time when you've got to be a little bit smarter and put emotions aside and use your head instead of your heart. And it's very difficult to do. Very
mm-hmm.
difficult.
It is because when you show your cards or you show the person that now you have taken control. Oh my God, you, as you said the other day, Delilah, online, you got to pay the piper according to him, you know, because he's not going to settle for that, right? So what happened next, Crush?
So I get a phone call. I picked my new pro for that month of June. Everything's going great. I'm getting ready. I'm organizing for my event. And I get a phone call from a young lady named Jacqueline Robarge, founder of Power Inside. She called me. It was late. And she said, Vicki, I just got a strange email from your ex. He said that you were under investigation for misappropriation of funds and fraud, and that he could no longer be associated with your organization. So I'm like, what? And I, at this point, I'm pissed, I'm hurt, and I'm upset. Because when I broke up with him, I'm thinking, I'm not going to seek revenge against what you did to me, and I'm the one that really should be seeking revenge. I walked away.
Right.
But he did not. And she sent me the email, and it was just a bunch of lies. However, he sent it to all the people who I met in the community. He sent it to the mayor. He sent it to the governor, delegate, you know.
Oh, my God.
Everywhere. So I told her the truth. You know, what did I have to lose? This was a woman. I was sure she, you know, had some experience with what I was dealing with, and I just told her. I left him. He was abusive. And I guess this is his way of getting back at me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how this, you know, everything happens for a reason.
Right.
She, Power Inside, she works with women who are incarcerated and women who deal with violence out on the street. Mm-hmm. So she gave me a test about, you know, regarding the domestic violence, the severity of it. And I never will forget, my results were pretty astounding. My results were that I could end up deceased, pretty much. That was the test. I can't remember the name of it, but she asked me a serious question.
Mm-hmm.
And my score, my results, were in the higher range for experiencing physical violence and or death.
Wow. Was that your wake-up call finally?
That was another wake-up call, because I didn't consider myself a victim of domestic violence, because like I said, he never put his hands on me. There was one incident where he pushed me, but even when he pushed me, it wasn't like a shove. You know, we were arguing.
But you were thinking of it only in physical terms, and that's
exactly.
Not true.
Victims of domestic violence are like those women on Lifetime movies. They're black and they're blue, and they're, you know, they're victims in my mind. She said no. We went over the different forms of domestic violence, and, you know, I was a victim. I had to come to the realization that I was a victim of domestic violence, emotional and mental. I was a victim. So then a couple of days after that, I get a my supervisor calls me into the office, tells me that she received a letter from this man and all the stuff that he put in it. He told my supervisor how I had used state funds to do
the same letter.
All types of crazy stuff. So, and my supervisor said, look, this guy's crazy. I can tell by what he's saying it's not true. But you need to seek a protection order. And the woman who gave me the test also, Jacqueline Robard, she suggested that I get a protective order. So I went to the commissioner's office and tried to seek a protective order. When I filled out the paperwork, the man behind the desk says to me, you know, this guy is quite a bit older than you. How do we know that you're not the crazy one? You young ladies are the crazy ones. It's really never the guy when they're older. Are you sure you're not the crazy one? And I'm looking at him like, are you kidding me?
That would have pissed me off so bad.
I had the proof. I had everything. Point out that he sent to my supervisor, the stuff he saw my organization. I had his threats, everything. And he started, my ex was threatening me on Twitter and Facebook. He was threatening me openly and on the internet. So I printed this stuff off and sent it to them or gave it to him, and he's still questioning whether or not I'm the victim or the abuser.
He didn't believe it even after you gave them evidence on paper?
As he's reading it, he's like, okay, this guy is crazy. This guy is nuts, huh? And I'm looking at him like, why else would I be here? I'm not going to waste my time to come down here to file a protective order against somebody if it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
So that enraged me. So I got my protective order, and we went to court. And, you know, he tried to lie. He said it was me. And the judge pointed her finger at him and said, stay away from her. If you see her on the street, you cross the street. She does not exist to you anymore. Now go over there and sit down. So he went and sat on the bench, and she told him to sit down because she wanted me to go downstairs to get my final protective order, which was good for a year. So I went downstairs and I obtained it, and he still harassed me. I was getting weird emails from strangers who wanted to meet me at night to talk about Remember Me. Then I was getting phone calls of people breathing in the phone. And then acquaintances of mine would approach me and tell me things that he said about me, that I was really a prostitute, that Remember Me was just a cover. I was all types of crazy crap.
Oh, you know, my God, this is awful. Delilah, what would Susan have said at this juncture, do you think, when a victim is doing this? After they got the protective order and it's not working, I mean, with working with all of the victims that she did, what would be the next thing for the person to do?
Well, a lot of times, you know, a lot of times a protective order isn't even a way to go. Simply, well, it's obviously not, you know, in most cases it's not. And there are some cases where she advised against it because all it did was antagonize the abuser even more. So, you know, her, and this is, you know, for any victim out there, documenting the abuse is the thing that you have to do. It's just something that you have to do. And even though the protective order or police report, things like that do document, they're still not going to give all of the information from the victim. So the victim needs to have all of that paperwork and add to it, so to speak, you know, by doing an evidentiary abuse affidavit. But at this point, you know, I think what my experience with her was that a lot of times after the person is separated, they need their own specific plan. They need to know not to contact, no contact whatsoever, so on. And, you know, there's 100 things.
So, you know, and each situation is different. So it, you can't just put out a blanket statement and say, well, this
right.
is what you need to do. It depends on the case. It depends on the people involved. It depends,
mm-hmm.
you know, on who they know. And I mean, there's a lot of people that are very connected, so to speak. And in cases like that, you've got to take a different plan of action.
Right. Oh, that's true. So it's not one size fits all by any stretch of the imagination. And you have to, like you say, develop a very specific plan in order to protect yourself and to keep away from the person. But, plus, with regard to, the fact that he was still harassing, I know the way this kind of evolved is sort of unusual. Why don't you share with our audience what happened with him and with you as a result of your affiliation with the Guardian Angels?
So at this point, you know, I'm fed up, but I'm really hurt. Taught
uh-huh.
the system that the police are here to protect us.
Mm-hmm.
That I did all the right things, you know. And I really felt like I was victimized once again.
Right.
I was victimized by him, and I was victimized again by the justice system. The peace order, I learned quickly that the peace order that I obtained was really just a piece of paper. And I think I referenced this in the Dreamcatcher. They call it the proper protocol document. You know, it's really nothing. If these abusers can't abide by the law, they're not going to abide by a piece of paper telling you to stay away from the victim.
Right.
That's
right.
like a joke. And if anything, like Delilah just said, you've crossed the line. You've just outed this person as an abuser. This stuff is public record. Their friends, their coworkers, their family, future employers, everybody knows this now. They can see this. This public record. You've just exposed this person to the world as an abuser. You've crossed
mm-hmm.
the line as a victim. So you
yep.
further infuriated them. Now, actually, you really did something. Most victims of violence, they really don't do anything to warrant this stuff. But now you have.
If you're being proactive on your own behalf and
exactly.
trying to, and you expose them, that's a very good point. That's a very good point, good way of putting it. You're doing something now against them, whereas they were always doing the things against you. And,
right.
oh, my God, you know?
Now you're doing something, finally. You've been doing all the right things, but now you're doing something for yourself that's right.
right.
And in doing so, you've exposed your abuser to the world. And that, yes, that's a huge, just like an accelerant for the fire. You've just crossed the line. So now is an extremely dangerous time. When a victim decides to leave their abuser and when they seek that order and they're granted that order for the world to see,
yep.
You've entered the danger zone. So I'm hurt. You know, I really don't know what to do. My mom, she was extremely frantic and worried. She wanted me in the house at a certain hour. She called me consistently when I went to work, wherever I was going. She wanted me to come straight home, which I did, but I felt like a prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to a vigil. I was invited to a vigil for the young lady that actually, you know, inspired me to start Remember Me in downtown Baltimore in front of City Hall. And I see these men in red berets. I had never seen them before.
Uh-huh.
And they go up to speak. Strider goes up to speak. And he talks about his involvement with helping to search for Felicia Barnes. And then I go up to speak and talk about Remember Me. And Strider pulled me aside and said how he wanted to come work with me. Well, you know, work with me on garnering awareness for these missing kids. He really liked what I was out there doing. He invited me to his headquarters. So I went to the headquarters, talked to him, and immediately he's like, look, I don't know, you know, who you're working with, but I really want you to join my team. And I was kind of hesitant because I'm out here by myself. I'm doing this. This is brand new. Yeah, it's not as notable as the Guardian Angels, but I just started it. So I, you know, researched them. I met with Strider a couple of times and after that. And I said, you know what? this is a phenomenal group of people out here doing amazing things. They're out here, you know, the Guardian Angels at this time, too, had just started embarking on missing persons. Felicia mm-hmm. Barnes was actually the first young lady that they had helped search for. So we technically started on this journey together for missing persons, just in mm-hmm. separate. So I decided to join. And I was hesitant on, you know, revealing what all I had been going through because I had just joined this organization and I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to bring that to him. So when I finally, I really didn't have a choice, you know. And when I told him that, you know, he's like, look, I'm going to tell you this. It's the truth. A lot of people don't want to hear it, but if you want to survive, then you got to survive. You can't rely on the police. You can't rely on anybody, protective order, to help you because they're not going to help you. He's going to do something to you, and it's going to be bad. He said, but I'm going to work with you and teach you how to defend yourself. So when he tries to come for you, he'll be the one that's going to be the victim, not you. And we trained, and he taught me quick stuff that were deadly.
You mean and self-defense techniques?
Yes, self-defense techniques without weapons, but quick stuff, stuff that would hurt him, anybody. And ironically, I started working with the Guardian Angels, doing TV appearances, going out in the community. The phone calls ceased. The emails ceased. And I really felt like I had transitioned survivor then.
Mm-hmm. But it's remarkable that they just kind of stopped altogether. What do you attribute that to?
I attribute that to the Red Beret. The Guardian Angels is a highly reputable organization. And I also have to attribute that to Strider. Strider is a very well-known community leader here in Baltimore. And
mm-hmm.
A lot of people respect him. So joining the Guardian Angels and joining an organization and then a remarkable team with a remarkable leader, I feel like definitely made a huge difference. Those are the reasons why my ex decided to stop harassing me and to let it go.
And you've had no contact whatsoever since that time?
None. Ever since I put on that red beret, nothing.
Delilah, how unusual is that?
Well, you know, there comes a point when the abuser is threatened. I mean, he's threatened by what that red beret stands for. And I think, in my mind anyway, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it stands for the fact that somebody else has got your back. And
it's a
large group of people. So, you know, that it has just, you know, tons of meaning to it. And to be, you know, honored enough to wear that red beret says a lot. It says, you know, somebody's got your back and you've got someone else's back. So don't mess with us.
Right. And so this, I don't know if he had, Crush, did he have any kind of stand, your abuser, did he have any kind of standing in the community before? I mean, was he a well-known person, so to speak?
He's well-known as, you know, for
it's
doing what
job.
He does, but he's not respected. He's not respected.
Yeah. Well, my idea is that I'm betting everything I own on the fact that he wouldn't just stop this behavior with women. He just decided to stop with you, and he's probably moved on to other, not one, but multiple women that he's tried to do this with since that time. I mean, that's what I predict. What do you think?
I agree with you. That just doesn't stop overnight. They move on to other victims. That's what abusers do.
Right. And I think so, too, because it's just not in them, in their personality, and the way they're, whatever is causing this, to just totally stop the behavior and turn around. It just doesn't make sense to me. Let's talk a little bit. We've got 14 minutes left to the show. Can you believe it? We've really, you know, it's really been very, very, very engrossing. Wanted to talk a little bit about the fact that you know, I understand your apprehension about coming, about, so to speak, coming out to Marcus with respect to, you know, this past, and or even to other people in the community when you go in and speak, that, you know, as if it's a bruise there for everyone to see. It's a black mark on your character or something. When you go from how do you go from being, in your opinion, a victim to a survivor and feeling safe? And in my opinion, as a homicide survivor too, you have to start with one person. Maybe that was Marcus, and then you go to the other people in the organization, and maybe you go to a support group where you don't immediately feel comfortable about revealing this. How do you go about this so that you gain your self-confidence back?
You know, what I learned through my experience is that's nothing to be ashamed of. And I think we talked about this a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
I want to be seen as successful, as strong, as wealthy people. They don't want you to see any flaws, like something's wrong with them. They're always on top of their game. And anything less than that, then you're seen as weaker, not as worthy, you have issues. But what I learned is, you know, that's not always the case. Everybody has something that, you know, they could work on. And as far as being a victim of domestic violence, there are so many women that are victims of domestic violence, women who know it and women that was like myself who did not know that. So when I decided to reach out to the first person that I reached out to was Jacqueline Robards of Power Inside, and she actually went with me to court to obtain my peace order. She called me to check on me. She was a huge, she was a remarkable asset at that time.
Uh-huh.
And the second person that I actually, you know, opened up to was Strider.
Yeah.
But I learned that, you know, I was not alone, that there were so many other women who were dealing with this who hadn't decided to leave. You know, their husbands or boyfriends would insult them, you know, in public or beat them in public. Not just behind closed doors.
Right.
It was accepted, and that really broke my heart. You know, it was nothing to be ashamed of, and when I stopped being ashamed, you know, I wanted to tell my story. And I wanted to tell my story because it was the stories of the victims that I profiled that saved my life. So, you know, by telling my story, I could in turn save somebody else's life. A light bulb.
And is that how you're convincing them that they need, that they too can change their life by telling your story? It's the power in your story.
I would like to think so. And you know, I've also learned that you cannot tell a victim of domestic violence to leave. You can't do that. You can't do that because you're putting that victim in danger. Unless you are willing for that victim food, clothing, shelter, 24-hour protection, employment, daycare. You cannot tell a victim of domestic violence to leave. You just can't. You're putting that person's life in danger. But I think it's important to let them know that they are not alone. There are resources out there to assist them. And if they ever need somebody to talk to help them with the process, you know, I'm there for them. I'm more than willing to help. And there are other people out there as well.
Right. And so what have you, what do you think in terms of being a young, intelligent woman? You know, you got fooled. I got fooled in a mirror speaking in one relationship because you don't see something going on that's there. Does this experience color your attitude toward eventually pursuing, you know, other relationships with men in the future?
It definitely harbored it. You know, I've been single since this incident. Haven't really been dating. We look at men like, you know, the same again. You know, you're searching. After going through something like this, you're searching for signs that they're crazy. And what way is that to live? you know? And if there's certain things that I hear, kind of like they could ask, like genuinely want to know, okay, well, where are you? That would turn me off immediately.
It's a red
flag. Don't ask me that. Like, I don't ever ask me where I'm at. If you don't see me, then I'm not with you. If I'm with somebody else or whatever, but don't ask me that. Certain things that men say, and it's like, okay, no. And it could be a genuine just wanting to know out of concern. And it's like, okay, I'm done. No.
A total turn off.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Wow. Well, I can't say if I blame you, but, you know, I think, you know, when the time is right, you if that's what you want, you will find the right person. But I think what you're doing is remarkable. And, you know, what are some of the things, because we still have like 8 minutes left, that you are doing with the guardian angels and otherwise to affect what's going on in your community? What are you doing right now? What are your projects?
Right now we are closing the end of our year and planning for 2015. We plan on expanding, going into new communities that we haven't really been active in, as well as reestablishing and solidifying the relationships that we already have. And just, you know, going forward, trying to make this year bigger and better than 2014.
Mm-hmm. Have you had a change of people after the gubernatorial elections where you have to kind of win new people over, or are they the same people that you've known?
These are definitely new people. Well, some of them. We have a new governor and a new state's attorney. So we have to, you know, build new relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so you're just going to continue the good works that you have been doing. And do you see yourself, if possible, attending the Q Center conference again, hopefully?
Hopefully. The Guardian Angels will be there.
That's wonderful. I would so appreciate seeing you again, especially since we've had the show. I wondered, can you talk about some of your goals, your own personal goals for the future with regard to the kinds of things that you would like to see?
My own personal goals.
Anything with, you know, since you don't have the Remember Me active, is there something else that you want to do for women of color coming up, or some of these new communities you're going into? Something that you, I know, that, would you like to talk about a little bit about what that the fact that you write and the book that you're working on? We haven't discussed that.
I would actually like to start assisting victims of human trafficking, to those who, more so now, who are, you know, victims of violence, period. I stopped profiling just because the Guardian Angels, we have so much stuff to do every day. Baltimore, unfortunately, is kind of a violent city.
Right.
So we really had a lot of community things, teaching communities how to police themselves and become vigilant in their own community. So I kind of got away from profiling victims of violence. I would like to start doing that again. And like I said, I would like to reach out to, you know, human trafficking victims. And I think I mentioned this to you a couple of days ago. All of this is connected. Victims of domestic violence, murdered victims, missing persons, and human trafficking. They all have these commonalities that, you know, you really can't distinguish them from.
I think I've heard that from my co-host, too.
Well, I'm so happy to hear someone else recognizes it. I've always, you know, been involved in with clients in all of these issues. You see the overlap, and you're absolutely right. There's a huge overlap in every single one of them. And I think until an organization or a group or some society in itself comes to that realization and actually finds certain things from each aspect of it that can be corrected, none of these issues are going to be solved.
A lot of these, you can't really separate it.
You can't separate them. They're not separate entities. They all kind of flow from each other, and, you know, substance abuse, the trafficking, you know, prostitution, starting out as prostitution and then going into trafficking and, you know, whatever it may be. So, you know, and we can only do what we can do, you know, our individual self and as a group. But with all that you've been through, but it sounds like, especially with being such a leader in the Guardians, do you have hope for the future? Is there hope?
There's always hope. The key is to making people aware. Just like we're flooded with things about stuff that really doesn't make any sense, like Kardashians, who's dating who, you know, who won this game. And just like we flood the media with that stuff, we need to flood the media with stuff that is of substance, stuff that really matters. Missing persons, murdered victims, human trafficking. Once we make people aware and encourage them to get involved, I really believe that we will see a positive change.
Well, I think so, too. We just have to keep doing things like this, like these radio shows, to engage people's attention. I really do think it really does help. So I'm hoping that you will circulate this and will encourage everyone to listen. And, you know, and the more knowledge we have, the better we will be. And, by the way, is there contact information that you would like to share? Because we're winding down to the end here. If someone wants to talk to you specifically about what's going on with the Angels in Baltimore, or just in general, or women of color, if they want to help you with a project, what information can you give us to give us?
We are on Facebook. When you type in my name is spelled Krush with a K, K-R-U-S-H. My last name is Kent, K-E-N-T. I could also have an email address, crush.
Yep. Go ahead.
angel@gmail.com. Again, that's crushangel@gmail.com.
Yeah. Okay, so people can contact you there. Just as a quick aside, how did you get your name assigned? I'm curious.
You know, Shada told me that he was tired of strange men calling the angel phone asking about a new angel that they would like to take to dinner, get to know better. So he called me Crush, because it seemed like every time we went into a community, there was somebody who was infatuated with the new angel. Yeah. So I said, can we change the C to a K, just because... You know, it kind of bothered me a little bit, but, you know, we had fun with it. So he let me change it to a K.
Okay. Well, now I understand, because, you know, they think maybe we're talking about a can of soda or something, you know.
Yeah.
But we know you're a lot more than a can of soda, Crush. So anyway, I'm just having fun with you. We have had a wonderful hour. Delilah, hasn't it been very informative? I think to share personal stories is so valuable. I really do think it has been. And we're going to look forward to seeing you in March. But in the meantime, we're going to close out to this evening's show. And, Crush, please do stay in touch with me. So we'll say good night for now. We'll talk to you off air. Good night, everyone, and we'll see you next week.